greatest story ever told about Christmas has been kept secret from the masses. There is a lot more to the story of Christmas than people know. Some Christian historians have found different pagan dates and rituals that have been tied in with our modern version of Christmas. They have missed the entire intention of the ancient Jubilees and have all but killed the spirit of peace on earth, goodwill toward men, that the angels sang 2,000 years ago. Our guest tonight is Glenn Kimball, and the website is www.kimballcollege.com.
Yeah, he was just here not too long ago.
Exactly. Welcome back to Ghostly Talk, Glenn.
Well, it's always fun to be with you guys.
Well, you know, you were just on the show here, like last month, and if you go to KimballCollege.com, there is just a host of educational things that Glenn works on, and one of them that I was just scrolling around looking at as I was looking at Glenn's site last month, and I come across Christmas, the real story, and I was like, this is so topical, obviously,
exactly.
Yeah, so why don't we run with this thing, and... just the season, we all have our own outlooks on how Christmas is, how we want Christmas to be.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are very religious about it. Some people just kind of enjoy the whole fun, the shopping, the whole product line.
The new stuff.
I love all of it.
Yeah, I consider it a pretty fun time of year. I mean, you get to see your family. That's my big thing, is just to see my family. I never get to see them anymore. So,
but underneath it all, it does, on all the banners and everything, it does say peace on earth, goodwill toward men.
Mm-hmm.
That is like an underlying theme of Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how much peace or goodwill I feel.
Well, nowadays, it's like... Well, I'm going to sound like a jerk saying this, I think. I'm really going to sound like a jerk saying this, but whatever, I give... unconditionally all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I do get kind of grinded on every year is it seems like it's getting more and more intense, especially that I've been doing Christmas shopping for a little, this season. I'm at it. I'm doing my thing,
mm-hmm.
And every store I've been to so far, they all want me to give to somebody or give to something, along with buying their special card, their cult card they
mm-hmm.
have that will give you discounts. But they're all like, do you want to give to this thing? Do you want to give to that thing? I'm like, dude, I just want to get the hell out of here. Right? So, I'm going to totally get grinded for that probably. You're a bastard and you're just greedy. I'm like, no, I'm not greedy, we do a lot of things. I think we give, for the show, for example, enough, but there's other things we give into also.
So that's the modern version, the commercialism, and then they're trying to force you into being a good person or whatever by, give to our chosen charity.
Well, you should be giving, you should be giving all year long. You shouldn't wait till the end of the year to try
exactly.
to atone for all the crap you've done all year long. Give all the time.
But
be a decent person all the time.
But what Glenn can help us
with is
what was the original intention? How has it become, commercialized over the years?
Uh-huh.
And Glenn, obviously, what we're feeling inside. You go out into the stores as well.
Yeah, I do, and I think we end up doing what we want to do. I think Christmas has evolved to become exactly what we have wanted it to become. A time of the year when we do meet together, a time of the year when we can let our hair down, and,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the year we tend to raise money to solve our own problems. At Christmas time, we tend to think of somebody else, and that may seem commercial to people. I think any time we have a moment to remember Jesus what he stood for
mm-hmm.
is a good thing. But, the original, we tend to think that the original Christmas started right after Jesus was born,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's simply not the case. The original Christmas celebrations, the original remembering of December 25th, started back at the time of Nimrod. King Nimrod built the Tower of Babel.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the most famous relief, stone carving relief that we have from Babylon today of Nimrod, it depicts him with wings on his back, a fir tree in one arm, and a flying reindeer in the other arm.
Oh.
And this is over 2,200 years B.C. And so we've really borrowed a lot of that Christmas motif from him. Jesus was never born on December 25th, but Nimrod was born on December 25th.
Interesting.
Oh, so, well, first of all, I want to ask you about this, because you mentioned Nimrod. This is tying in with the Masons now, though, because if I remember correctly, part of the Masonic ritual, or what I've been told the Masonic ritual is by certain people, is that one of the things well, Nimrod is kind of like the Masons' like head guy. Like, I guess the Mason is Jesus. Am I correct? I'm pretty sure I'm correct on that.
Nimrod was the nemesis for the original Masonic order.
Okay.
Now, if you look at the Masonic order today, and you look at a Shriner ring, or you look at the ceremonial sword that the Masons use, it all has a great big G on it.
Yeah, and that G stands for genealogy, from what I understand.
That is not true.
That's not true. Okay, tell me what it stands,
It stands for the word Gibelmite.
Oh, okay. See, that word, there's different things. You see what I'm saying? This stuff's going, okay, I'm all right.
And the Gibelmites were the original Magi. Now you're starting to see the Christmas connection here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The Gibelmites were the original fraternal order of the Magi. From the time, a long time ago, from even before Adam and Eve came to the earth, the Magi were an ancient fraternal order of priesthood who had the power to move great big stones, who had the power to navigate the stars. They're the ones that knew about astronomy, they're the ones that knew about quantum mechanics, they're the ones that knew about how to plant things in difficult agricultural areas. This paternal order of the Magi were the holy priests at the time of Nimrod. They were a worldwide fraternity because they learned how to navigate with the stars. As a matter of fact, in Great Britain, the Magi, when the Romans went to conquer Britain in 40 BC, they gave a name to the Magi. They called them Druids.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
They changed it. But this G on the ring was a very much a holy or a religious symbol depicting the original priesthood order of the Magi or the Gibelmite. The Gibelmite fraternities were coveted because of their craftsmanship, because they learned how to do things with stone, and that's why that they were very much a part of the Pharaonic or the Egyptian fraternity until the time of the Exodus. When they were released, then they let the tribal councils go, and they escaped. The thing we don't realize about that particular event was that why most of the people had to go through the Sinai under the leadership of Moses, there was a group of them that left on a boat on the Nile, out through, stopped off in Macedonia, left a great big pile of loot from the pharaohs in Macedonia where you can go see it in the museum today. Mm-hmm. It's still available today. And they sailed out to find peace out through the Rock of Gibraltar, and they landed in Spain. And when they got to Spain, these people under the leadership of Gathelas and his wife Scota landed on the Spanish border, and they were mercenaries who had fought alongside Moses in the Ethiopian Wars. When they came, the Spanish took offense because they saw this great big army landing on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
The Spanish lost a little skirmish there, and so they gave this group of people, these mercenaries, a land. They called it the Port of Gathelas, or the Port of Portugal.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
Then their families migrated for peaceful purposes, because they didn't want to keep fighting the Spanish. They went up and took their families to a place called Iberland or Ireland, and they ultimately ended up settling a country that they named after the great Queen Scotha, or Scotland.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is a history that we need to know about. Arthur C. Clarke talked about it, you know, and before he died. And people like the famous psychiatrist, I forgot, Carl Jung and...
Carl Jung, yeah.
Freud.
Freud. Sigmund Freud, okay.
Sigmund Freud wrote about it. And so we're not talking about something that's news here. Mm. We're talking about something that's been very old, but we have refused to countenance in our day. Because we tend to write the history of England via British, via Roman historians rather than via what really happened to Great Britain. Had a great deal to do with Christmas. Mm. Because by the time Christ came into the world, they had been forced to celebrate the birthday of Nimrod for centuries, and they refused to allow any of their jubilees to be any birthday whatsoever. And so the birthday of Jesus was an anathema to them, and we didn't adopt celebrating the birthday of Jesus until 533 A.D., when Dionysius Ignatius, a Scythian monk, was asked by the Roman Empire to reestablish or to hold the 500-year centennial of the death of Jesus and his birth being roughly 33 years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that put the zero in the Julian calendar and gave that honor to the birth of Jesus, which is obvious to everybody. Everyone knows that. They just mm-hmm. didn't know when it occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to reach back in history and find out what day should they celebrate, because by the time of 533 A.D. they had forgotten the actual birthday of Christ. And so they celebrated what their ancestors had been forced to celebrate, which was December 25th, the birthday of Nimrod. And by the way, when he died, he had married his mother when he'd actually murdered his father.
Well, we're talking about Nimrod right now, right?
Nimrod murdered his dad and married his mother.
So I was like, okay, that's Jesus. We got a real issue to talk about here, man.
Yeah, this sounds like a Shakespearean tragedy.
This is Nimrod we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and his mother, when he died, she said that that out of a stump grew a fir tree overnight, and that he would return every December 25th and fly around this tree with eggs on it, which were round balls, you know, to symbolize fertility,
mm-hmm.
that he would come back and he would leave presents under the sacred fir tree.
Ah, okay. Another time.
That's where we get the flying Santa Claus
coming
back December 25th.
And this was Nimrod. Nimrod's the one who was responsible for this.
Nimrod's the one that's totally responsible for that part of the practice of Christmas.
Wow.
So how then can the, you know, because obviously this has a lot to do with the church, right? I mean, you know, the Christian church and, you know, the Catholic church and everything. I mean, it's a huge deal. Christmas is a huge deal in the United States. And it's all, a lot of it is religious based, but some of it is now, you know, been washed
just
away.
Just a celebration of goodwill and all that, you know,
but
in
how
general.
Can the church look at this and say, oh, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have this Christmas festivity, you know, and then know that it was based on all this stuff. Why wouldn't they move it or change it? I mean, and I'm talking back in the, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. I mean, obviously, right now it would cause a big
I'm just wondering why it had to be reestablished. What was the reasoning why this stuff was all reestablished? Why couldn't they just go with the original story? I mean, it isn't...
Yeah, if they were celebrating...
It obviously isn't as friendly of a story.
Well, you ask a good question, but you got to remember that they moved the center of Christianity to Rome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Rome already had all of these holidays from Nimrod and all these... They called them pagan holidays, but they really... I really resent this idea that we label things pagan and Christian and Judaism. I mean, they were originally all one thing, and we use pagan almost like we need to name call, you know, something that's not our classic beliefs, and that it's for some reason it's bad, bad, bad because mm-hmm. somebody else believed differently than we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I calling someone pagan is like calling someone Islamic terrorist. You know?
You know? It's true. There is a negative connotation.
Well, yeah, when you say the word pagan...
In mainstream America, there is a negative connotation to pagan, although I do know...
Although there are people that welcome that title.
I do know a lot of people who are proud. They're I'm pagan and proud.
There's bumper stickers. I've seen a bumper sticker that says
exactly.
I'm pagan and proud.
So, yeah. I mean, the connotation just in mainstream America, because that's what's forced, you know, down our throats.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the Druids of our day are earth worshippers or nature worshippers. The Druids of the time of Christ were not... nature worshippers per se. They were very much involved in Christianity or in knowing who Jesus was. They were the people. They were the Magi who visited the birth of Jesus, for heaven's sake.
Right.
You know, we can say what we want, but they were intimately connected with that, and they had been for thousands of years prior. Even the ones from Great Britain had been involved in that. That scenario for thousands of years prior to the birth of Christ, and there's no question about it. These people had expected the coming of the Great One. Nimrod wanted to make himself the Great One, and they wanted to force people to celebrate Christmas to make him that antecedent for the Great One prophecies,
mm-hmm.
Which means that the prophecies did exist. Mm-hmm. The legends exist that the Great One would come, you know. Pardon me, that's we all came from a similar source, be it Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, Islamism, Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
We all came from a common religious or metaphysical source et cetera. And for us to point fingers at each other, we have to point fingers at ourselves, because we're no more perfect celebrators of the day of Christ or the coming of the Great One than the other religion is. You know, I mean, they have a piece of the puzzle as well. And until we accept that, we end up not knowing what happened, because the rest of the puzzle is in somebody else's backyard, you know. And that's the problem with Christmas. Christmas is an amazing thing, because before they wrote the book The Christmas Carol, Christmas in Great Britain resembled more Halloween than it did Christmas. It was always a time for gift-giving and remembering the poor, but the poor would go from house to house. They would knock on the house of those of people who had nice homes, and they would ask them if they could stay there the night. And just in remembrance of Joseph and Mary knocking at the inn, you know, mm-hmm. and needing a place to stay the night Jesus was born.
Yep.
They would do that, and if they didn't allow the people from the street to occupy their house for a day, then they would perform some sort of trick on them. And so the original practices of Halloween, which kind of broke off and spun off and became our Halloween,
mm-hmm.
were originally Christmas celebrations, or very, very similar to Christmas celebrations. And it wasn't until the writing of the book The Christmas Carol that we began the modern-day practices of what we see in terms of Christmas in our day. I frankly like Christmas. I've enjoyed it since I was a kid. I get a different feeling at the time of Christmas. It gives me a chance and an excuse to see my family and to love and care about them. And so what if I buy them a present? There isn't a guy who's bought more presents for people in his life than me, and I love the practice.
No, I'm the same way with that. Just a few months ago, for example, when it comes to just kind of tugging at the heartstrings, I was at my folks' house, and we were going through all of these old Christmas heirlooms that we've collected over the years, namely a lot of Christmas ornaments and stuff mm-hmm. like that, that are like 20, 30 years old, some of these things are. Really delicate. You got to be really careful with mm-hmm. them. But these are like, you know, my mom's like, you know, well, you know, we're too old for this kind of thing now. We don't like doing the Christmas tree thing, but you're starting to do that now. So, you know, maybe you should start taking some of these things. So I did, and I have like this, and I was going through these things, and literally it was like one of those things where I'm like, oh my God, wow. I remember when I made this thing at school, mm-hmm. and, you know, all these memories come out, and it's a beautiful thing. And yeah, I mean, of course, I just said a few minutes ago, the family thing, you know, times are tough. We're all working a lot of hours now trying to keep up and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, seeing the family, spending time with your family, getting some laughs, catching up, it's a great thing. So, yeah, you know, even if, I mean, we're still going to cover a lot of stuff here. We're not done yet. But, you know, I think people should keep that in mind, and that's how I feel about it, too. It's a great time of year that I have a lot of great memories I look back on and laugh about. You know, I think I've told some of those stories here.
Well,
go ahead, Glenn. Go ahead.
We need to think about the glass being half full mm-hmm. rather than the glass being half empty here. Almost every single one of the traditions that we celebrate at Christmas time has a root in truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even right down to the angels singing in the heavens with the shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that if such a miraculous event happened in the open public, that there'd be some sort of independent record from a disinterested party and have recorded that in history. Well, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
There is.
And where's that?
Let me explain where it is.
Okay.
The Sanhedrin, who was a disinterested party with Jesus, for heaven's sake, they're the ones that fomented the crucifixion of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Herod and Annas, the family of Annas and Caiaphas, were the ones that didn't want him to appear at all, and there's reasons for that, but that's a Thanksgiving topic, or an Easter topic. They had 70 members in their council. That when these shepherds heard the angels' choir singing in the hell, peace on it, in the mountains, hills, peace on earth, goodwill toward men, they didn't believe it. So they sent an investigator out to try and root out the source of these rumors that were going everywhere at the time.
Mm.
This investigator went out and he interviewed the actual shepherds who had seen this great thing and some of the local community members, and he took eyewitness testimonies and accounts, wrote them down and certified them and brought them back to the Sanhedrin, and they were placed as part of the permanent record of the thousands of documents that were preserved by the Sanhedrin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those Sanhedrin records went into Turkey, and eventually some of them wound up in the Vatican, and that particular document, which was the eyewitness accounts, explained the whole thing about the angels singing and how the music seemed to roll down the hills like an ocean wave, has surfaced in our day, and we got a perfect copy of it.
Mm.
And it comes from a disinterested party. And what a story that is.
Well, yeah.
I can only imagine. I mean,
you want to have a Christmas thrill that'll chill your spine, go to my website and mm-hmm. get The Witness of the Shepherds. It is... It's the Christmas story of all time.
And that's on your website, KimballCollege.com?
Yeah, it's there.
Go check that out, people.
I didn't invent it. It's been around for 2,000 years.
I think it'd be a pretty good story. I'd have a good story to tell if I, you know, I come out. I'm not a shepherd by any means, but if I did come out of my, you know, the winery here, the haunted winery, and saw the angel singing somewhere, like out on the street, I think I'd have something, an interesting story to tell, too. I'd be blown away. I don't think I'd have... Actually, I wouldn't have much to say, because I'd be standing there going,
It's like if they ever have nuclear war, I'm going on the roof with a glass of something to watch it happen. Well, that's what the shepherds kind of did. If they sat in their fields, which was not on December 25th,
mm-hmm.
because they would not be watching their flocks by night in the fields with the lambs
mm-hmm.
in the winter time. The lambing season was in the springtime.
Yeah.
And so Jesus was born literally in the epoch of time called the sign of Pisces or the fish.
Yeah, that's both the Doug and I. We're born.
So he was born in April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like the tail end of it, too. For lack of no pun intended either on the fish thing.
Yeah. This idea of celebrating December 25th is really celebrating the sun pause day. The equinox occurs the 21st and 22nd, but for 3 days the astronomers couldn't see the days getting, couldn't detect or measure the days getting longer until December 25th. So they would celebrate the days beginning to get shorter on the sun pause day, which was December 25th, which happened to be the day that Nimrod was born. And that's where we get December 25th. But Jesus no more was born on December 25th than I was, you know. I don't think historians could go back that far. I think there were dinosaurs or something, or amoeba floating in the ocean. I don't know what.
This is great. Why don't we take a quick break here, Glenn? I think we really covered a lot of the good, like a lot of the immaterial, the ideology, a lot of these things. We got into some real deep stuff. Why don't we take a quick break, though? On the other side of this break, though, what I'd like to get into is maybe some of the more material things that we know about that associate us with Christmas, like the Christmas tree or Santa Claus or these things. Would that be cool with you, Glenn?
Good.
Fantastic. You know, we can get into these things. I think people really get a kick out of this stuff, too, to hear, you know, the origins. And we talked about Santa Claus years ago here on
That's
the show.
True. Yeah.
I'm talking like way back in the beginning of the show, the days of this show. So it'll be good for like another refresher for the old school listeners and something new for the new listeners or whatever you want to call. All right, this is Ghost of Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays, all that good stuff. We'll be right back after this.
Tell me what I need to hear.
We're talking to Glenn Kimball of www.kimballcollege.com about, well, the season. We're talking about Christmas time and the
well, this is the last show. This is the last show before, you know, before Christmas. And, you know, we don't really celebrate. I mean, I don't think we ever really celebrated Christmas too much of a show here. I mean, just, I don't know. We just kind of hammered through every year. Just pushed through like nothing was happening because, you know, we're on a mission here, you know. So, there's nothing you can distract
That's
us from
untrue.
Doing this show.
We used to have a Christmas party every year.
Yeah, but it wasn't part of the show, though. It was just something we'd go and get loaded and make fun of each other. And it would be a Saturday night, and then we'd be in pain for the show the next day, but we'd never tell you that.
That must be what Christmas means to us.
Getting drunk and complaining.
You get loaded, you like complain about everybody who was at the party.
Not what it means to me.
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Doug.
But no, it's... but what's interesting is we haven't delved in a long time into, you know, the different meanings behind Christmas.
The symbols, you know, the things you think about, right?
Yeah, and we just talked about the actual date with Glenn, you know, in the first half hour, and Jesus.
How all these things tie together, it's just insane.
But now we can talk about some of the other symbols that everybody's familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a great idea, and that will help us. When you look at that thing, you'll know then more. It'll still mean what it means to you. You know, when I see a Christmas tree, I think of many decorated Christmas trees, you know, from four decades of, you know, my mom and brothers and me and my dad decorating up a Christmas tree. So it'll still have that meaning to me.
Yeah.
Right? But now I'll know more. When I see a mistletoe and I try to avoid it, I'll know why I'm trying to avoid it. So, you know, I mean, I'll know more once Glenn tells us what some of these.
Well, let's talk
know,
about the Christmas tree, Glenn. What is this thing all about?
Well, a lot of people would suggest that we get our Christmas tree celebrations back 1,000 years ago from the Germanic celebrations of Christmas because they had the old Tannenbaum, you know, you sing that, back from the 8th century A.D. The reality is that was a journey come lately, too. The Egyptians were worshiping fir trees back in 2200 years B.C., and obviously Nimrod... celebrated the fir tree, but you got to remember that Egypt and Babylon are out there in the desert, and no wonder they celebrated the fir trees because they could remember epochs of time prior to the last cataclysm when that area of the world was not a desert but a very fertile, rich area where there were lots of greenery growing. And for them to worship the fir tree is really reminiscent from the Magi could remember this epoch of time from a very long time ago that they called Mu or Lemuria.
Okay.
Wait
a minute, Glenn. You mean to tell me that Egypt was not always a desert?
Well, I don't know. The last time I was in Egypt, and I have been in Egypt, with the princess... Malik, as she sailed up the Nile.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on her boat in the and been to dinner with all of the desert economic ministers and politicians, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew very well about the fir tree. They're depicted on the walls and up and down the Nile, and Abu Simbel and Karnak, Luxor, and then the Ramesseum, etc. They're depicted very nicely there, but they are really reminiscent of a time which was called Mu. For example, Rome, if you remember what Rome, the traditions of Rome being settled, they were settled by a set of twins called Romulus and Remus, or Ra, which is the sun god of Egypt, Romulus, and Remus, or the king of Mu. Ramos, that's where those things came from, is because, and they had seven hills. Well, that's not a coincidence. The seven hills of Lemuria were the ones that survived the cataclysm. Not that it was Rome that was the surviving entity of that, because it was really in the South China Sea which had the seven isles of the blessed that survived this cataclysm that happened so very long ago. But we can find civilizations of men that are tens of thousands of years old up the Khyber Pass, for example, we can find tombs that are of men that are 30,000 years old. You know, where I used to live here in the Midwest, we found tombs of people that were 70, 80,000 years old. And people say, well, that denies the fact that Adam and Eve came to the earth, and therefore religion must be hooey. And my comment is, well, no, it isn't that. Because the very religious guys like Hesiod talked about the five epochs of human civilization, and that Adam and Eve were just the patriarchs of the final civilization.
Mm-hmm.
That there had been four additional ones. If you go to the Native American Indian tribes and look at the Shalom Balam and some of the other documents that they left, you find that they believed in all five epochs of time and that we're in the final epoch of time. So these civilizations existed. We've just begun to recognize the importance of Mu, the fact that, and the terrain that surrounded the lands of Mu. It's an amazing story of human civilization. These people also had the identical religious customs that we do today.
Mm-hmm.
They believed in the coming of a great one. We look at, for example, the Sumerian traveling exposition of the Anunnaki, which Zachariah Sitchin is so famous for.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you look at that statue that represents the Anunnaki really well, you look at it really closely, and you examine it, it's a man nailed to a cross.
Yes, yeah.
And so, you know, these are people that existed long before Adam and Eve came into the world. Adam and Eve were just simply the patriarchs of a final epoch of time, and their children went east, and some of their great-grandsons went farther east than we expected, and merged with the people who had survived the final epoch. By the time of Eber, which the prophet Eber in the Bible, and by the way, Eberland or Ireland is named after Eber.
Oh.
All people coming from Eber were Hebrews.
Oh, okay.
Ebers were Hebrews. And so when we talk about Hebrews, we're not talking about Jews. Jews were just a very small part of that. There were very strong Eberites that were in China. That's why one of the first above-ground Christian churches, even before Catholicism, was in China. We know that's the case. We're absolutely certain that's the case because the people from China, by the time of Kublai Khan, he sent a letter to the Pope in the 12th century that said, "Hey, look, if you need help with the Templars to recover the Temple Mount from the Islamic community, let me know. I'll send you as many mercenaries as you need. The only thing I want back is I want you to send me 1,000 Christian priests." Now, why in the world would a Chinese guy that's the head of a great big freaking army that conquered half the world ask for 1,000 Christian priests? Because his people knew about it. His people had been practicing this. The written language of Chinese is so almost identical to the writing of Hebrew, it's amazing.
Oh, I never thought about that. I never thought those two cultures would have that much in common.
Well, they do when there's been scientific lexicographers who have compared the two languages, and they're identical. You take the people who took the original Greek alphabet, for example. You take Alpha and Omega out of the Greek alphabet, but what's the middle letter in the Greek alphabet? Mu.
Oh, so it comes back again.
It all comes back. We got to remember this is thinking of the glass half full.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to restore history if we're looking for it to come back purified and sanitized with chlorine and there's mm-hmm. no disease. Okay. All of it has a disease with it. Mm-hmm. Everything's contaminated. Everything's changed. Everything evolves over time. Anytime men touch something, they change it, and they change it because that's the way they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how history gets lost. mm-hmm. is when you change it and it becomes different than the source document, it gets lost. I liken this to a party game. Remember the party game we used to play where you'd put 10 people in the line, you'd whisper to the guy in the back something, and by the time it got to the front, it was all scrambled
up.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I tell people, let's play the same game, but let's put 10 lines in a row and whisper something to all 10 people in the back. When you get to the front, you'll have 10 separate stories.
Yeah.
But if you compare the common points of all of those resulting 10 stories, you can put the original story back together perfectly.
Mm, yes.
And that's working for the puzzle pieces.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening now, essentially. Now, with the Christmas tree, though, I mean, we hit the Christmas tree thing. We went back to, this goes all the way back, you said, to Egypt, that they were worshipping fir trees, though, right? Am I correct?
That's correct. And so fir trees were part of the worshipping of trees. It had to evolve into the worship of palm trees because they didn't have any fir trees.
Mm-hmm.
So the worship of fir trees and palm trees kind of got mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
And that got taken into the Picts in Germany, the civilization of the Picts in Germany, because who was the guy that took it there? Gothelus. The same guy we talked about in the last half hour, who went to and settled into Portugal. These people knew about these traditions because his wife, Skota, was, in fact, the granddaughter of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He was married to an Israelitish princess. And now the word Israelite's kind of interesting because you take it apart, you go, Israel.
Mm-hmm.
His name originally was Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got himself an Egyptian name. Isa was the goddess of Isis in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Ra was the sun god.
Sun god, yeah.
And El was the Hebrew god. So you got Israel, or Israel, was the name of all the people who descended from Jacob who were still in Egypt. I thought that's kind of interesting.
Wow. Santa Claus. We got to talk about Santa Claus. I know it's a hell of a...
We only have like, what, 6 minutes or 7 minutes?
But I really want to talk about Santa Claus and this character. Obviously, you know, when we think of Santa Claus, I mean, I almost sat on his lap last weekend. I was at the mall with Amber, and he was sitting there chilling with some kid, and I'm like, we should go see Santa Claus. And of course, Amber's like, you're 33 years old, for God's sake.
Who cares? I go see Santa every year.
Me too.
Good for you.
I do.
Good for you too, Glenn. All right. Well, then tell Amber then, because I wanted to see Santa Claus, and she said
okay.
No. All right. So, but this character, I mean, he's a friendly, jolly character who gives us presents, right? You know, we know all the whole thing. I know it's a bit of a different story, though. Care to elaborate, Glenn?
Well, he was a real person. Saint Nicholas was born in Turkey, in Lycia, in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
He came from an extremely wealthy merchant family. That's why St. Nicholas is still the patron of all sailors and all pirates and everything to do with the ocean going people,
mm-hmm.
As well as spinsters. He used to put gold coins in kids' shoes once a year, and he paid the dowries of spinsters who couldn't get married because they didn't have a dowry.
Mm-hmm.
But he got rich from his family got rich and left him an orphan. He got rich from the fact that his family were merchants. And then when they left him an orphan as a very young man, he went and finished growing up in a monastery, and he became the youngest priest ever in recorded history at the age of 17.
Wow.
And when he grew up, since he became the Bishop of Myra, which was walking distance from Constantinople,
mm-hmm.
or modern-day Istanbul,
mm-hmm.
Which is very close to where Constantine organized Catholicism, he attended the Nicene Council. And he was famous at the Nicene Council. Of course, he was only walking distance from there. He was famous at the Nicene Council for punching Arius right in the nose, and knocking him right on his keister. In fact, Arius hit him in the nose and broke his nose, and the body of St. Nicholas, they've examined his body, and he's got a broken nose. But the reason why he punched Arius in the nose is Arius was from Africa, and proposed to the Nicene Council that they include a whole bunch more scripture in the canon of the Bible. And St. Nicholas felt that was really a bad idea. And so when he punched Darius in the nose, he got arrested. He spent a little time in the pokey. And they had to seek out some of the bishops from across the Mediterranean to get him out of prison for punching one of the senior members of the Nicene Council in the nose. But St. Nicholas was a very well-respected man, other than the fact he was feisty like me and was ready to punch somebody in the nose, me too, in any moment in time. The traditions of him being a saint really fled north into Russia, especially into the Russian Greek Orthodox faith, the Eastern Russian Greeks. In fact, there's a common saying in Russia that says, you know, God could die and we'd still have our Saint Nicholas. You know, mm-hmm. That's a very common saying in the Russian Greek Orthodox faith. They absorbed the Nestorian Christians from China, mm-hmm. and they all became one religion, and they had their own Bible. It was called the Bee Bible, B-E-E Bible. The symbol of Israel was always the beehive, which mm-hmm. was a very busy symbol.
Mm-hmm.
But St. Nicholas was a very, very real person who came from a very, very, very wealthy background and became the bishop, one of the most influential bishops at the Nicene Council, which formulated Catholicism, and eventually they broke off and became the Eastern Orthodox Christian faith. And St. Nicholas became the kind of like the Pope of the Eastern Orthodox faith, much like the evangelist Mark became the Pope of the Coptic Christians in Egypt. I mean, you know, we had our Pope, they had their Pope, everyone's got a Pope, you know.
Well, if I don't,
he was a very important person.
Well, yeah,
too,
very important
obviously,
person, obviously.
You know, did, you know, to become a...
And that, well, that whole idea of goodwill, I mean, how nice, you know, how good he was, like with the whole comment, you know, God could be dead and we'd still have our same...
But he was still feisty.
Yeah, he was still feisty, but he was a nice guy, which is, you know, that's the whole idea of Santa Claus, even today, is that, you know, Santa, hey, he's a nice guy. As long as you're good, you know, he'll give you presents, but, you know...
That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
You put your finger right on it, that you have to be a good person in order to receive the presents. You can't be bad. St. Nicholas, there were 20 miracles associated with him.
Okay.
These were largely miracles that happened on board of ships, on ships that he was riding on at the time, by the way, where he saved people's lives and helped the mass from collapsing into the water and you know, the miracles were largely having to do with merchant seamanship, because that's what his family had done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how he got to be raised to the level of sainthood, was the fact that he was associated with 12 miracles. You had to have a miracle or you couldn't be a saint. So St. Nicholas literally had 20 documented miracles, which are in the book, the 20 miracles of St. Nicholas, that still survives in our day.
I did it again.
You left your cell phone on.
Yeah, I'm thinking of meeting. I'm sorry. Okay, no, I'm sorry about that. Okay, it's gone.
Well, so that is absolutely interesting. So,
but it all ties into
look like this, or what, like the Santa Claus, or was that the
Coca-Cola? Well, the red and white outfit?
Was that,
you know,
the Coca-Cola implementation of it?
Well, the red and white outfit is really the outfit of the priestly magi and Nimrod wore it, but also St. Nicholas wore it.
Oh, interesting.
This is the same outfit that if you go back, if you go and see the bishops as they meet in the Vatican, they still have the red and white outfit.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
It comes from the same source, the long robes with the white lining around the bottom and around the collar, etc. It's the very same type of thing. But when you're talking about the beard, the long white beard, that's not characteristic of St. Nicholas. That's the characteristic of Nimrod. The relief of Nimrod that we have from Babylon that still exists in our day has him with a great big long white beard. That's more of a facial or bodily comparison with Nimrod than it is of St. Nicholas himself. Now, if you want to talk about the actual being fat, that's me. That's
you know, that's it's really interesting, though, Glenn, because what happens is you've got to dig through all these different stories and all this history, and some of the history you have to find first because it's not in our books.
Mm-hmm.
And you find these little bits and pieces,
mm-hmm.
and then you can put together something
that
might be a lot more realistic than what mm-hmm. we learned back in, you know,
elementary school,
back in commercial high school and commercial elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be a war. You cannot approach this thing with and begin like Mark Shermer would do and say it's all crap, you know. The great Randy, everything's all crap, you know. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know how that guy gets along every day. I mean, his wife must think he's a real jerk, you know. In fact, he is a real jerk. That's just me. That's not this radio network.
We don't care.
Blame Glenn Kimball, because the great Randy is the greatest jerk.
The opinions of Glenn Kimball are of Glenn Kimball only and not of Ghostly Talk.
He no more could discover his way out of a paper bag because the fact that you have to have tolerance for what people believe and look at the glass half full and compare what they believe and play the little party game and listen to what everyone's saying at the bottom end and compare it back with each other, or you're never going to restore history.
No, and I agree with you on that.
And you're going to be doomed to repeat it again.
I agree with you on that 100%. And that's what we've done. That's what we've done for the last hour here. What was that?
Well, I'm hoping for tolerance for him for Christmas. Though.
Yeah, hoping for tolerance for everybody.
I think we ought to release him from Guantanamo Bay with the rest of them and let them all go back.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately, we're like seconds away.
Yes.
Now, thank you, Glenn,
this
for joining. Yeah, thank
amazing,
yeah, Glenn.
Yeah,
thanks
having
for joining
a Christmas
us.
Visit from you, Glenn.
Yeah, that's great.
What a phenomenal.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Well, we need to do the Americas one of these days.
We will. We'll have you back on. Hang on the line. Don't leave us. Just stand by for 1 second, okay? All right, guys. Well, here's the story. Here's what's happening now.
Yes.
If you've been looking at the website, you'll see that the 28th of December, we're not, that which is next week.
Right.
Okay. Today's the 21st, obviously. But next week, we're not going to be broadcasting. Just for the holiday here, we're going to take one day off for the holiday.
Yeah.
And that's going to take us through New Year's also.
So we want to say to everybody, Merry Christmas and Happy New
Year. Yeah, Merry Christmas to everybody out there. And like,
and I'm going to be a new grandpa on the 20th.
Oh, December. Congratulations.
Oh, that's awesome, Glenn.
Congratulations, Glenn. That's the 20th. Okay, excellent, dude. That's great to hear. Good luck to you on that, by the way, also. What a present, huh?
I know. That sounds... That is, there's the miracle right there.
There you go.
It's planned because it's one of those ones that has to be planned.
Oh, I see.